think the pandemic's intensified the gap between rich and poor, between those at the centre and those in the margins. We've just seen that so clearly. And again, the Psalms speak right into that, about God coming to bring justice and bring a levelling again.
Welcome to Psalms for the Spirit, a podcast about spirituality and resilience through the lens of the biblical Psalms. I'm Karen Young-Wimberly, a Presbyterian minister and spiritual director from the US but living on the north coast of Ireland. I've been working closely with the Psalms for about 10 years now, arranging, recording, performing Psalms set to Celtic melodies, along with my dear friends, the McGrath family from Dungannon, County Tyrone. And through the years, I've heard firsthand about how the Psalms help people through times of trouble, through times when the mountains seem to be falling into the sea, times when the world is in upheaval, either on a very personal level or on a collective level. So I got the idea of exploring how the Psalms actually help us, how they lead us toward healing and hope. How do the Psalms lift our spirits? I'm inviting friends and respected teachers to speak with me on this podcast about what they think about this question, about the connection between spirituality and resilience. Today's guest is Karen Campbell, minister and musician, originally from Northern Ireland and currently based in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Karen and I first met when we were both serving Presbyterian churches in the Belfast area, but our friendship has extended into our shared love of music, the Psalms, and spirituality, as well as some fun times and good laughs along the way. Here, Karen shares about her connections with the Psalms throughout her life, leading up to the creation of an album she and her husband David put together during the pandemic period of 2020. I'm grateful to the Campbell family for the music in today's episode. Their son Ian's voice features in the opening song, followed by David's voice, as well as other musicians from the Church of the Servant, with whom they recorded this beautiful and uplifting album. In our conversation, we look at how exploring the Psalms through music, art, and honest reflection helped her congregation uncover deep grace in the midst of the pains, laments, and hurts that came to the surface in a turbulent year, and how that process has led them to hear the voices on the margins in a clearer way. Check show notes to see photos of some of the artwork that came out of those sacred times of gathering around the Psalms. So whatever it is that brought you here, I'm glad you're with us.
God charts the roads you take, He watches every step. Since your delight springs from loving His word, you thrill to read God's word from the day dawns till night. This quiet growth springs fruit of seasons of life. Lord, make us verdant trees. Blow away lesser things, transplant the drought into the wellspring of life. Plant us by living streams, lighten the darkest place, make the day dawn anew on our setting sun.
One of the first times I got to know you was when we were in Grand Rapids, where you are now, and we were trying to find an ice rink in the middle of the night. We got lost.
You gave me your iPhone, which I'd never had an iPhone in my hand.
And then the snow came, and we were also sharing our life stories in the meantime.
What we've been through in life here, honestly.
And now I'm here, and you're there.
Disperse, we see His face and bear His glorious name.
How is your spirit these days in your community spirit right now?
Well, so we're coming up to the 1 year anniversary of this crazy year of pandemic, mm-hmm. and our church hasn't met really in person in the building for a whole year. So that is so significant for us as a church community.
Not at all. There hasn't.
Not at all. We've done a bit of outdoor worship in the summer, but nothing else. So it's all been on Zoom. You know, it's not the same. We've managed. Grateful that we have people who want to still worship. So it's a real mixed bag. Like, there's the heartache of you just want to sing together in community and you can't, and all those significant losses, can't do communion together and share bread and wine. Mm-hmm. And yet I think the surprise is there's that spiritual hunger that hasn't left any of us, and mm-hmm. people to try and support, try and encourage. So it's good. It's mm-hmm. not the same, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't say we're flourishing, but grateful for realizing there's an essence of being in all of us that's tapped to the divine and yearns for the divine, and that mm-hmm. is still there.
Mm-hmm. We'll say more about the hunger that you've noticed.
I think that there's something about pandemic. On the one hand, it exposes your false self, but it equally points to what's real to you. And I think that the beauty of pandemic, we've had people join our church community, just search us out. And I think it's been humbling because we know we're not at our best at the minute. Not because we're preaching stormer sermons or anything, but, you know, just that reminder deep within us, there's this yearning to know that, and maybe it's because we're limited and restricted, mm-hmm. and you're asking, is this it? Is this really life? And I think having life so limited in so many dimensions, family life, spiritual life, does make you wonder, you know, is there more? And that connection to God, the limitless resources of God, has been so important mm-hmm. to keep returning to.
So you found people seeking that out, even people who weren't in your community before, they seem to be finding you.
Right. People find you on the church website, get in touch, find a way to log on to Zoom, and then finding ways to integrate them into the Zoom community as well has been interesting. Mm-hmm. But just really grateful for growth, mm-hmm. which is not what we thought would happen this year.
In your spirit, in the midst of all that?
My spirit, I'm very cerebral, Enneagram 5. Mm-hmm. Very introverted. Mm-hmm. So the initial lockdown for me was great, you know. a retreat and less frenetic, less busy. All that was just wonderful. But then as pandemic wore on and the relentless decision making of, well, how do we do this in church life? You know, that was wearing and taxing. So I find in terms of concentration, it's harder to concentrate in pandemic. I've had to adjust my spiritual practices to that, but it is just harder to sit with God and be still. So stripping it right back to breathing exercises before I start, or even just sitting in silence with God, has been important, because I know if I just start devotion with God, my brain is so all over the place. I've really had to be a bit more intentional about being realistic about where I'm at, being more honest as well. And so learning to cultivate breath prayer and silence. And then when I sit with God, it's usually quite a short Bible passage, nothing too in-depth, but just more lightweight food than the real deep spiritual food. So there have been adjustments for sure in this time, but just a good reminder of to be honest with God, be honest about where I'm at, and not try to put an expectation, which can then be quite the false self working again, you know, than true communion with God.
Sometimes the seed does die and brings about glorious life to bring us towards the new. city of light. No more will be the cursed light, will the night disperse. We see his face and bear his glorious name. Lord, make us fodder trees, blow away lesser things, transplant the drought into the wellspring of life. Plant us by living streams, lighten the darkest place, make the day dawn anew on our setting sun.
I know that you have done a lot of work with the Psalms yourself. I would love to hear about your connection with the Psalms in the past. Do you remember learning them as you were growing up?
Yeah, so early memories growing up in a Presbyterian rural congregation, very traditional. So the very first thing that you sing is a psalm, metrical psalms. The old Presbyterian hymn book, there would have been psalm settings. And I've moved away quite a bit from metrical psalm singing just because I'm in a different location, different tradition. But when I hear some of those settings, they just hit so deep.
Oh,
so deep. Yeah. So if I Google, you know, a psalm setting that I would have sung as a kid, oh boy, it just, it does something. But I think you know, there was the language was very archaic. It was hard to connect. So at a cerebral level of understanding, I don't think I had a full appreciation for what these psalms meant. I learned them at Sunday school, many of the psalm settings. Psalm 8, I could recite in the full version. So, you know, there's a memory there that goes very deep.
Could you give us a flavor of what that sounded like?
I hope I can do this. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent in all the earth thy name, thy starry frame, from infants and from sucklings' mouths, by his strength by thee ordained, that so the avenger may be claimed, things like that. But it's just the iambic pentameter. It's there. I would need to rehearse it again.
Yeah, but that gives me a flavor. So it's very easy to memorize.
It's so metrical, so steady, you know, always rhyming, just quite a strong identity in the metrical, you know, it's very deep pulse. It's not lyrical. It's a strong, steady heartbeat, you know. Whereas I think maybe now the settings we use are much more lyrical, softer as well.
So what would be the melodies with those ones?
So the melodies would be a variety, some from the Genevan Psalter, some from the Scottish Psalter. But the way the hymn book would have been set up, you could, you know, it was a half and half hymn book to be seen.
I never understood how it worked, but I know I've seen this.
Yeah. Move the top half of the book to match the bottom half of the words. And yeah, it's quite a thing. It was quite a thing. But, you know, there's something so deep and measured about it when you think the top half of the book. So you could only do so many notes to fit in the top half of a book so that you could use the bottom half. Like, it was quite a feat to get it all so matched up neatly and metrically.
So somebody put a lot of work into that, and it was important, very important for the community.
Presbyterians
in Ireland for a long time.
And non-negotiable, really, growing up, first song was always a psalm. Never fully understood why, but it was a deep thing.
So you have deep memories of that as a child, and those psalms are written on your heart in a very special way.
And then as a teenager, I think many of us were caught by the Ian White psalm wave. I don't
yes.
know.
Yes, and there are quite a few albums, like seven albums or something. Yeah.
Right. And just the realization. So the metrical psalms would be closer to the King James Version, whereas Ian White's were new international versions. Mm. that's kind of a bit of a Sam revival, I would say, in our culture at the time, knowing someone who's very friendly with the guitar singing Sam. Yeah, that was another important marker in my life. And then later on, when I was a minister and realizing that the diet of songs being sung in the Presbyterian Church in Ireland was quite skewed towards contemporary worship, it felt like there was a gap again. So when I was part of the worship committee, centrally, we did Psalms roadshows, encouraged people to create new Psalm settings. And that was quite exciting to reimagine the Psalms in so many ways. Yeah. So that's when I personally really returned to it and said, there's a gap here. This is important to try and enrich the diet of worship. So last year during lockdown, we had more time, but like in the evenings as a family, you know, we didn't have to run the children to clubs or things or sports. So that was the time we got writing again. We'd done maybe one or two psalms before, but nothing significant. And we were putting out to the congregation a midweek meditation, mm-hmm. and it felt nice to be able to provide a new psalm setting. So every week for a run, we tried to write a psalm, and that was a nice discipline mm-hmm. for us as a couple. David helped do the music as well as the words, and we produced the album at the end of the year, which went out to the congregation, particularly those in nursing homes, care homes, who really struggle even to connect in worship on Zoom. So we wanted to do something that would be in their homes, that connected them to the congregation, but also to worship and to the psalms that they love too. Oh,
that's such a nice gift.
Yeah. And then the other thing that we did, so, you know, the congregation we're in has a rich tradition of psalm singing too. Many years ago when I was visiting this congregation, way before I thought I'd be pastor of it.
Yeah.
They were doing what they called their psalm contest Sunday. Mm-hmm. Once a year, they have a psalm contest, which is in memory of a young person, Ben Butler, who died tragically at a young age. And money was gifted to the congregation, and they decided to set up this psalm contest. So every year they invite people to write a psalm. There's a prize and a winner every year, and then they premiere it in January, the coldest month of the year in Grand Rapids.
The snow piled up outside.
No, oh my goodness, it's so cold in January. But they've been doing it. This is year 11 now, mm-hmm. and they get people from all over the world writing wonderful, wonderful psalms. It's been so successful. So, you know, psalms are very dear to this congregation. So alongside the writing of the music, what we did on Facebook Live, we did like a lectio of the psalms and encouraged. We've many artists in our congregation and also a big international community, many professional artists. So I invited them to come on Facebook Live. I'd read the psalm twice. Then I play the piano whilst they live painted something for 10 minutes about this, talk about it. And we called it Dark Times, Deep Grace, which kind of sums up the psalms because they're quite dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you always find the deeper grace in each of those psalms. And that was just a wonderful time. We'd invite people to join us live. So people would be typing in chats and comments what they saw being drawn by the artist. Then the artist would talk about why they drew what they drew. And just fabulous way to encourage us. And I think it was important to do lectio with the psalms because, again, people were so distracted. And, you know, there was last summer, even in Grand Rapids, riots on the streets. You know, it was a turbulent time politically. All the racial injustice was flaring up. So we deliberately chose Psalms of Lament and Lord, why? Why are you doing this to? And that really connected with our people.
So what was the time period that you did that?
started it May, June time and went all through the summer. And we had a different artist every Wednesday night. It was quite something. It was quite something.
As you were saying that, I was thinking it would be natural to do that around Lent, but you're saying actually you just followed it right through the whole summer. And it was a very, very turbulent time. Really big questions were coming to a head. To be able to continue to explore those must have been really meaningful for your congregation.
Yeah, like there was a lot of hurt and just a sense of instability that I think many people had never encountered, not just personally, but in the political sphere. And that continued all last year, really, in America, you know, the storming of the Capitol, things that you would never think possible. And that was coming through quite tangibly in these Wednesday evening times together. And, you know, we sat with many of those psalms that talked about, Lord, what are you going to do about these people? You know, quite honest, raw questions. And I remember one of the first psalms we looked at was Psalm 79 in the Message that talked about just people who didn't respect God and didn't respect their fellow human being. And there was a phrase that the artist picked up on were, let their God taunts boomerang and knock them flat. So it's this idea of sending up taunts to God, but God boomeranging them back. And so this artist just kind of splattered paint upwards, and then there was gold paint she splattered back down, and it was like rain, golden rain coming back of God's love in some ways, but also his justice. And it was powerful, powerful just seeing her embody the Psalms in that way, because I think the Psalms are so full of emotion, joy and sorrow, anger, tears, and it's important we embody them. So to have someone actually embodying it and painting it out was just stunning.
I can imagine to combine the words that you're meditating on with a visual picture, it just would enrich it so much.
Yeah, and I think I learned psalms are done best in community, to sit with an artist and see what they're experiencing through it, and then the people watching what they're picking up. That's what made it rich, was the idea of we can still do this in community. We can't sing our psalms, but we can still have the psalms very present and be very relevant to, oh boy, you know, just having so many of those lament psalms speak right in to the heart of what's going on politically, issues about justice. You know, it just strikes so deep.
Light in the darkest place, make the day dawn anew on a setting sun. On a setting sun.
How was it to be working on producing something new over that period of time? I'm thinking of your album that you were working and you were writing songs from the beginning of lockdown on, and then you were able to do an outdoor concert, which is lovely, and I'm sure that was so much fun to do. And then you were able to arrange and produce this album and get it out in December. How was it for you to be working on that? How did it weave into your life?
Like, part of it was desperation. Just the desperate need to hold on to something, maybe hold on to truth, number one. So, like, I'm a creative, I know you are too, Kieran, but the need to create, it surprised me how strong that felt need was at times, just to feel you're doing something creative and pushing back the darkness was important. And a lot of the psalms that we wrote were connected to real life situations. So the lament psalms were connected really into what was happening in the news cycle in America that week. You know, how do we respond? And because they were being put out midweek, some were just sheer lament. we call out to you in the deep, Lord. But then there were some that were much more personal, and some congregational members lost loved ones. There was miscarriages. There was a real tragic death of a young 22-year-old right at the start of lockdown, and the final song, whilst it's not a psalm, it's based on the Jeremiah passage, the Tree of Life, which connects to Psalm 1. So the very first song in the album and the last song are both in memory of people who we'd lost. And they're dear to us as a community because of that, but also lifting up hope. Like the first song is Psalm 1, and it talks about the Tree of Life. And there's something so wholesome about that nurturing image of seeing a seed die to itself, get resurrected, growing strong, putting roots down into the ground. And then when the storms come, it's not really toppled down. There's very few trees that, you know, get uprooted because of hard weather conditions. And I think that return to nature's been a good thing to consider. In lockdown, many people have just slowed down, gone on more nature walks, and contemplated the steady persistence of God's faithfulness season after season, you know. So having that bookend in the album was important, the Tree of Life, and how God in creation teaches us about who he is, and resurrection as well, resurrection hope.
One of the songs that I really loved, and I don't know, I was on and off Facebook. I kind of went through long periods of not being on Facebook, but I remember one time I was on and I saw your video of Deep and Further Deep.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I think that was quite early on. And I thought it was really moving, and it really kind of stuck in my head. It's just very memorable, the refrain of that. There was something very touching about the way you had arranged that song and hearing David sing it, and you were playing and he was singing it. Yeah, I'd love to hear more about what's the background to that one.
Yeah, so I think that was one of the weeks where I think there was a lot of turbulence in America. I can't remember exactly what week.
Which particular turbulence it was.
But, you know, again, it was a lament. And we used the refrain, Deep and Further Deep. But then in the way we arranged it, there's a Celtic traditional melody that kind of, it's an instrumental verse. We chose it that way so that we could put more of the psalm words into it. So on the video that we put out, with the Deep and Further Deep as the refrain, and then when we went to the instrumental music, we would have the rest of the psalm prayer showing the words of that on the screen. And our boys helped us put that on the screen. It was a bit of Campbell family collaboration.
I loved it.
So, yeah, getting as much of God's truth out there, and a way to pray, and a way to help people pray. And, you know, music just does that for people in a way. If I were to say the same thing, just without using music, but to try and preach it, it doesn't. I know it doesn't. But there's something about putting it into song that it stays in people's memories for sure. You know, that's what we remember, rather than a 5-minute talk. No matter how good or polished it is, it's the songs that stick.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, I listened to it one time, and then I remembered, I'd say most of the refrain, probably not all the words, but, and then the next time I heard it, I was like, oh, I know that one. But I literally only heard it one time, but it sticks with you.
Yeah, it's something about getting the words and music in a way that it just hits deeper, you know, into the heart, into the soul, and becomes lived on it.
Deep and further deep in search of you, Lord, I cry to you, O God, to hear my prayer. I cry to you, Lord. I cry to you, O God, to hear my plea. The shadows hover those who long for morning. The darkness leaves us empty, steals our strength. We wait and watch for morning. To beckon with steadfast love, you set our faith aflame. When
you were doing these different things with your church, and really, you know, you were focusing on Psalms and having the Psalms accompany you through not only the pandemic, but other turbulence, as you said, the turbulence of the time that you were living through. How do you think the Psalms helped people build resilience? Because that's what I'm exploring in my podcast, is this idea of how do we get through difficult times? How do the Psalms help us through? And it sounds like they really did help you and your community through.
Well, certainly the dark times, deep grace Psalms helped our people process pain, and it gave a safe space to let out some of the pain, but frustration that life was not better than what we wanted it to be, disappointments that were happening, the injustices that were happening racially was a big theme over the summer. And I think having a place, knowing this was God's word, but equally, it's not just a rant on Facebook that we were doing, right?
Yeah.
Was worship. It was saying to God, we're carrying a lot here.
Yeah.
And we want to find a way to bring that to you, knowing that you will hear and answer as you see fit. So there's an element of trust going on, and an element of we're doing this in faith, not trying to control the outcome. Yes, we want life to be better for everybody, but at the end of the day, acknowledging it's up to God when God wants to act. And I think seeing that in the Psalms, that, yeah, there's a lot of heartache, a lot of crying out to God, saying, Lord, really don't like our enemies this particular day. What are you going to do about it? But then that release of, well, God, we trust that, you know, as that Psalm 79 says, that you'll boomerang back the taunts in a way that you see fit. But that's where it ends. So it was helpful because I think it's not taking matters into your own hands and seeking revenge. Mm-hmm. It's not directing anger at your enemies. It's all directed to God and then leaving it with God, and hopefully achieving peace within your own spirit as a result. And peace is easier to get some days than others. It can sound quite trite, saying I have a peace in my heart. But, you know, I think that was the work of our people over the summer, is to find a way to reach a sense of, yeah, there's a lot going on in all our souls in a deep, deep level here, and things have just been uprooted so badly in the American nation, but we're determined to work this through in a communal way and bring it and present it to God to try and strengthen our trust in God and not just let these things make us bitter or become unhealthy. So it was a processing exercise for so many emotions, mostly the hurts, the pain, the sadness, the anger, the frustration. But it was a way to process all that, hopefully in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting the way you said it. It's not a Facebook rant. It's not a rant. It's a way of processing pain. It's different because you're creating the space in which it's safe to talk,
right,
and to speak honestly before God. And it's not that you're trying to pretend that you don't have those feelings or that you don't have the anger, pain, lament, hurt.
Right. And I think our tendency can often be just to try and numb the pain. And that's where social media can really, you know, you're just scrolling and scrolling to try and get rid of some of the pain, but in a numbing way. So it's not really being dealt with. So it was very intentional. This is a space to bring our full selves to God and to find the truth in the situation too. Where are you, Lord? One of the songs that really spoke to me deeply in the middle of our album, it came about, I was listening to Thought for the Day on BBC Radio by John Dunlop, and he was quoting a poem about, can a mother forget, have you forgotten me, even though a mother might forget, you'll not forget me. It was just so beautiful. And you know, the Psalms talk about, Lord, have you forgotten me? And that psalm that we wrote, where the refrain is, have you forgotten me, have you forgotten me, and then can a mother forget her baby, though she may, I will not forget, you know. So it's just finding a way to ask God the question, but also leave the space for God to reply with the truth. I'm still here, you know, I'm still here with you, and this is the truth of who I am in this. I'll be present, whether you're crying in Babylon by the river or whether you're in the house of God, you know, I'll still be here.
Have you forgotten me? Have you forgotten me? We are waiting for your blessing. Have you forgotten me?
Was there anything that you felt came out of that period of reflection?
Yeah, like I think you can't really underplay the importance of community. So just realizing this is what we need as a people, and realizing the Psalms aren't for the pastor, they're for the people as well. And, you know, that came through so strongly, particularly with, you know, our refugee families. And we have a lot of professional artists who did amazing artwork, but we've a lot of international people in our congregation, so we very intentionally asked some younger people and some of our refugee families to participate too. So the very last one we did at the end of the summer was on Psalm 23, the Lord's my shepherd, and with a young African refugee teenager who's a wonderful drawer. He came in and he brought nothing with him to draw on, and it was quite an experience, you know. And we just quickly got a pencil and a paper, and I just said, just listen for God in this psalm and draw what you hear God say. And he drew something that I would never have got out of Psalm 23. He drew a globe of the world, and then God's hands right round the globe, has talked about how God holds and shepherds the world. It was phenomenal. It was just phenomenal.
That just brings a whole different dimension to it.
And every time someone from a different culture, you know, we had Sri Lankan, Sudanese, Congolese, every time they brought a whole other perspective on these psalms that someone who's white and Western just would not see in it. And again, that made it so rich as well and so deep. I'm sure you have this experience, Kieran. You're doing these live events in your front room, and then in the back room, your children are fighting. Both have that experience that the moment you go live, then all the noise starts in the back and the dog starts barking.
And the delivery comes.
All those things. So, you know, not to paint a picture that it's all easy. It's so not. So there's Isa. He's, you know, turned up with not a thing to draw on, let alone a pencil to draw with. So it was a real calamitous night. You know, it was just such a scramble, and we knew we had to go live at a certain time. It was right to the wire. But our youngest son, Duncan, was in the back room, and yeah, there'd been a few fights with the boy, you know, just the usual banter in the back. Isa had drawn this beautiful picture, as I said, of God holding the world in his hands. Just really striking picture. Well, in the back room, Duncan had, through the post, his parents had given him a modelling kit, and he was doing this little model. And after the adrenaline high of trying to get this Facebook Live event out at 8:30, by 9 we were done, and I walked into the back room. And Duncan, age 6, he said, "Mum, look what I made." And he held his hand out, and there was a globe of the world.
Oh.
And I thought, that is uncanny.
And he had no idea about what was going on in the other room.
There's another child from a whole other continent of Africa who's been drawing the globe. And then there's this Irish kid in America who's making a globe. And I think the sovereignty of God, you know, in those situations. And it's those little moments of connection with people and epiphany moments of, God, I've seen you and you've seen me and you've seen our children. That's been precious. Mm. That's precious. Not world changing, but just reassuring. I think there's been a great leveling, maybe in this pandemic too, of letting those who maybe haven't had a voice speak up with quite a clear voice.
Yeah, a voice that we need to hear. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and you've mentioned justice quite a few times.
Yeah, and on it goes. I think the roots of racism in particular have been painful to see, and the inequities, you know, we're at the stage of vaccines now. Many of our refugee families for whom English isn't a first language, it's just the cruel reminder of how difficult it can be to survive before pandemic, let alone during pandemic, and trying to help access things like vaccines, and just real hard situations of families who need to have one parent working, they can't homeschool, you know. One parent families where mum has to go to work, and just the fragility of some situations is heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. And And in church, like any institution, it's easy just to endorse the what is secure and what is safe. But we know that those in the margins just get further away and harder to reach. So just so many wake-up calls. Of, I think the pandemic's intensified the gap between rich and poor, between those at the centre, those in the margins. We've just seen that so clearly. And again, the Psalms speak right into that, about God coming to bring justice and bring a levelling again.
Yeah. Do you think that anything will have changed in your church community when you start getting back together? Do you think there's been a shift in the perspective on what's important, what to prioritize?
Yeah. So I think one major element where we've identified whenever we went to Zoom worship, we have an international community, but the majority would be white and Western and English speaking. And we noticed very early on that Zoom was great if you're highly educated and understand technology. And it pushed those of our refugee families to the periphery. So one thing we did was to cultivate a bilingual Zoom service as well as the main English, which was predominantly Swahili speaking with English as the second language. So that's been wonderful to see because it has enabled leadership to rise up from our African brothers and sisters. It's enabled particularly women who they're maybe at home not working, so their English is not getting as developed as their husbands. But all of a sudden, they're participating in the prayer time in wonderful ways, taking leadership in wonderful ways. And so we've noticed quite a beautiful decentering in our worship from the dominant majority community towards different expressions of worship that is breathing new life, hopefully, into all of us. And so the question is, when we get out of Zoom, how do we encourage bilingual worship or even multilingual worship? That was a surprise. It was done out of survival, noticing there was a need. It wasn't a strategy, let's go to bilingual worship. It was just purely we have to try and keep connected somehow. And yet it's produced something beautiful there that I think we want to talk about and cultivate.
I love what you've brought up in this conversation, and it's highlighted the importance of expressing lament and exploring the injustice that we're seeing around us and doing that in a safe space and expressing that through song and art and music and connectivity, hearing from others and bringing those on the margins into the center, because that's important and you're realizing in a whole new way how that's important.
Yeah, and I think there's something about the Psalms. You don't set limits, you know, so when Isa came, you just let them draw what, you know, you don't say this is what this psalm is about, because they can discover it in a whole different, more beautiful way. And that's what's made it beautiful to me, that the psalms are for everybody, every culture, every gender, every denomination, you know, and that's what makes it rich, 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 because it's a shared humanity in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A way to worship that people can find their own place in.
It's just amazing how these ancient prayers reach across time and space in such a powerful way.
So deep, so deep. They've traveled a long way.
Yeah, and they still meet us where we are. Keeping your spirit afloat these days?
Like, I think grace has been good to remember. I think prior to lockdown, we were caught in cultures of efficiency, productivity, And I think we all dared to believe that success would rise and fall on what we achieved. Like, we knew it wasn't true, but if you look at how we lived, I think that's how, what we believed. And I think it has been good to have some of that stripped back. It's not comfortable to have that work done, but realizing the limitless grace of God is what holds us, not our human strivings. Our worth is not in what we achieve. All those big, big, you know, foundational claims of what covenant love is about. I think those are good reminders that keep me, on the one hand, humble, but on the other hand, looking up to a God who can be magnified. And it's that contrast between, I think I feel smaller than I've ever done in some ways, but I feel God's bigger. So I think those feelings have intensified in a good way and a more realistic way. And that's something to be thankful for.
Absolutely. Shield us and save us and come down to... So good to connect with you.
Across the Atlantic Ocean, it's so good to see your face.
Well, there's so much to take away from this conversation, Karen.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about psalms that are dear to us both.
Thank you, and God bless.
Come, Spirit, come, rescue us, we pray. Shield us and save us, and come down to stay.